Hello, hello everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Iron Hack Podcast. I am DevOps Dan.
I am Ternary Tim.
And today we were joined by Noel Nizar.
Can't believe it. He had his own nickname ready to go.
He had a nickname that predated the podcast. So
Yeah. He predated a lot of careers, I would imagine, in the world of tech for the listeners out there. He's been working at Iron Hack for 9 years.
9 years, yeah. So he was there. I mean, Iron Hack is fast approaching its 10-year anniversary. So shout out to that. We'll be celebrating that in a few episodes' time. So today we had Nizar on, who was one of the original, or the original web dev course teacher, or one of the originals, I should say, and then since has gone on to work in the education team, and now he's in the engineering team. Maybe there's a few extra steps there, but nonetheless, a great insight on everything that's changed in the last 10 years of Iron Hack, and you know what's gonna be in the next 10 years of Iron Hack,
and everything that's stayed the same, because there's a lot of advice actually that I think has stayed constant. You know, that he shared, which is very cool.
It's like we always say, though, if you hear the same advice a lot, it's because it's good advice.
Mm. And if you hear advice once and it's weird, then don't listen to it.
Ooh, I don't know. What if the last advice you ever get is don't jump?
You're only going to hear it once.
It's good advice. No, I mean, and or if it's in the context of taking the leap into a boot camp, you should do it. And this is the episode that's going to push you over the edge there.
Here he is, Nizar.
Yeah, sure. My name is Nizar Khalife. You can call me Null Nizar. Who am I?
are you giving yourself a podcast nickname off the bat?
It's not really a podcast nickname. I'm just remembering from my time as a teacher. That's when that whole thing started.
Nice.
So that's probably where our nicknames come, the origin of our nicknames.
Yeah. We can talk about that when we get to it. But I don't actually know for a fact that I used Null Nizar in one of my courses, but maybe I did. Who knows?
Perfect. Great.
I'm based in Paris, and I work for the engineering team. Specifically, I work on our marketing software, including and most primarily the website.
And you didn't always work for the engineering team, right? You've had a bit of a journey through Iron Hack over your time there. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, that's right. When I started at Iron Hack, I started as a teacher for web development in Miami, and I've transitioned to different teams over my time here. So I went from being a teacher for 4 years to working on the education team, first focusing just on materials related to the web development course. And later on, I went into more of a management role within the education team. And then the last year and a half or so, I've been working in the engineering team in this role that I'm currently on.
Nice. A good old journey there.
Currently in your most favorite position, the one you think you're staying, or are you looking to move into a new...
This is still new for me. Yeah. I'm not in a rush to really make any changes right now. It's working well. So it's my favorite right now.
Podcasters one day?
Podcasters one day? Who knows?
Join the team. Join our team.
Yeah. You've already got a nickname, you know, DevOps Dan.
If it's helpful, I mean, why not?
I like it. All right. So what got you started down this journey? How did you first get into Iron Hack? Were you, was it just a random application? Were you a student first? How did you get started on the path?
Great question. So it's I have to remember. I have to really do some reflection here to figure out what the most streamlined way to tell the story. But basically, I was between jobs at the time, and I was doing a lot of networking style things. I think networking is a theme of the podcast. But I was doing a lot of networking, going to meetups, and just trying to get my name out there and meet people, and. I had been introduced to Ariel, one of the founders, who I believe you also had on the podcast at one point, through a mutual friend. So I had a former coworker who was a friend of Ariel's, and then when they were making the move, I was in Miami at the time, so when they were making the move to try to open a campus in Miami, around that time, our mutual friend thought it would be a good fit, a good meeting to make, and so we met. After, you know, that didn't really materialize. So after a while, I just kind of forgot about it. But during this networking thing that I was doing a lot of meetups and talks and stuff. So I ended up doing a talk I stumbled into doing a talk for Iron Hack. I didn't know at the time it was for Iron Hack, but then, so I did the talk about MongoDB whatever. And I did the talk about MongoDB, and I think Ariel was impressed with my work and the talk, and we started figuring out ways to collaborate from there. And basically at that time it was him and me and one other employee trying to build out the Miami campus.
Nice. And you talked about MongoDB there. Obviously, that's yes. sort of tried and tested part of the web development course. But over your tenure at IronHack, you know, so almost coming up to the 10-year anniversary, have you seen many big changes, kind of like on the tech stack, or what's the biggest change that you've seen? I think over that time,
so many things have changed. I think from the web development course perspective, well, from the general perspective. Just our course offerings have completely changed. When I started the working at IronHack, we were offering the web development course as our flagship product. We're also doing a mobile development course. None of the other courses existed. So data didn't exist, UX, UI didn't exist, cyber didn't exist either. And then, yeah, so that's a big change, product offering. When I started, we just had two campuses up and running, which were Madrid and Barcelona. And we were starting to open the Miami campus. The Miami campus it took a while. So I mentioned this gap of time between when I first met them and when they first started and actually working with IronHack. The reason for that is that there was a lot of administrative red tape that needed to be figured out in the US. So basically they needed approval from the state government of Florida in order to be able to market the course, even not let alone deliver it. So that was a big hurdle to overcome. And so at that time, three campuses, we didn't really have the well-defined roles that we have now of like, okay, we have a person dedicated for admissions, a person dedicated for career services and career coaching. We didn't, and a person dedicated for the student experience kind of thing. We didn't have those dedicated roles at that time when I started. That's something that we developed much, much later.
Why was Miami the third place? I mean, not that it's a bad location, but it was Madrid and Barcelona and then such a leap over to the States.
Yeah. I don't know specifically why Miami in particular. I think from what I gather, the thought was that the U.S. seemed like a good place to expand. And so that was the first city that within the U.S. that I guess made sense. I wasn't there when they did the research of figuring out why Miami specifically, but
you just raised your hand there, Tim. Do you know why?
Yeah, I think I do know. Yeah, yeah. Because I think I remember from when we interviewed Ariel that it was the origin story of IronHack was when there was like that whole split between unemployment amongst young people, and I think Madrid and Barcelona had the highest level of unemployment amongst 20 to 30 year olds, so that's why they chose those, and then Miami was the next was the city that worked the most along those
with that gap
in America. Yeah
that's kind of cool though. I mean, that's not a bad place to start from. Let's just choose where we want to go and then that's where we'll build from, you know. That's a cool origin story.
It's also crazy because it's become such a tech hub, hasn't it? Miami's like I don't know, one of the tech hubs in the US, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
It's certainly perceived to be so, and I think I'll leave it at that. I don't want to get political in the podcast.
All right.
Okay. So keeping in this theme of this upcoming 10-year anniversary of IronHack, shout out to IronHack, 10 years of good memories, I'm sure.
10 years.
Can you share with us you know, what's changed the most in the course and in the tech that's taught, you know, or is it maybe things that have stayed the same? Something in that vein that's really kind of like changed the most over the last decade you've seen IronHack grow?
I think there have been probably two major changes. Again, thinking of the web dev course specifically, so not only do we have many more product offerings now than we did then, the web dev course specifically started as a Ruby on Rails course, and the entire technology stack changed to be more JavaScript focused a little bit later. And then when it first became JavaScript focused, because there was a little bit of front end, but it wasn't really the focus of the course.
Right.
Later on, then when we made that change from Ruby on Rails and sort of more of a back end focus to more of a front end JavaScript focus, we started with Angular as our kind of a front end framework, and then we transitioned over to React, which I think is the other major change from the web dev perspective. I mean, from the way the business operates, it's really, really different. We have a lot more structure. Like I said, defined roles, because it's a lot of work to run a campus. I remember at one point, when we were doing the first courses in Miami, it was basically Ariel and me and then a couple of other people here and there. And the role, it was a lot of work. The roles were less defined. I think especially Ariel was doing a lot of different things and wearing a lot of different hats, which I guess is normal for a founder. But I think it was pretty clear that was not sustainable. So, and at that point, we weren't really, like, we had done some expansion, but then we slowed down on the expansion for a while. And then it really took a really conscious effort to decide to expand to all the different cities that we are now. And I think that was part of our DNA, but figuring out how to do that and how to do that effectively and what the expectations were, because opening a business in a new country is a big investment. So, like, I think we're just a lot more experienced and smarter about doing those kinds of things.
And what about the future looking forward? What does the future of Einhack look like? If you you don't want to show us too far behind the curtain, but what?
Yeah, I'm not sure how much I can talk about it because I was already
10 years in the future. What you got?
Oh, I'm not horrible at these things. But anyway, I think geographical expansion is going to be in the certainly in the immediate future. I think we've already announced our intention to open a campus in Puerto Rico, which is where I'm from. And I think there's going to be some more of that. I think that the product offering will have to change also. It has to expand or to different kinds of courses to meet different market needs as well. It's just something that we're already thinking of, although nothing has been really formalized or announced publicly. But I think that's another thing that is being discussed internally. And let's see, I think the future, to do all this work, we also have to grow.
Yep. I mean, London was last year, I think. You grew into London, I think. Opened up in the end of last year, towards the end of last summer, right?
I don't remember the date, but yeah, could be a year, 2 years ago, something like that.
Yeah, very cool. And just that first phase when you started, you joined as the teacher, you joined as the web dev teacher. Is that right?
That's right. Well, at that time, our courses were actually taught by multiple teachers.
Okay.
So I didn't have the commitment of a full course. So when I started, it was kind of more, I was more like, there was this role called the cross teacher, which was the person who is like the continuity within the course. From the student's perspective. So I was there in every single week. And even though the main teacher would change, and sometimes I would be the main teacher, I would still be the kind of that force of consistency and stability that for the students.
When you say cross teacher, it makes you sound like you were like the angry teacher, and then the other teachers right. are like, yeah, I'm right. cross well, teacher, this is the friendly.
This was in the US. In the US, okay. Cross doesn't mean that, so.
Good cop, bad cop teacher. Yeah.
It was a bit of an adjustment. There was a bit of a transition. Like I said, things weren't that structured, and we were still figuring things out as we went. So eventually we landed on the idea that, hey, actually that stability is kind of really good and really important. And the differences between teaching styles can be often disruptive, even though teachers can be great individually, the fact that they're changing their styles is making more trouble than it's worth, in terms of, because it is cool and useful to see different people's experiences. And I think fulfilling that need for students of seeing different perspectives is done in a different way. Like, they do talks now instead of having different people teach all the different times. So we slowly transitioned to this idea that we have now, which is like, okay, well, maybe it should be one person teaching the whole thing and provide that consistency and have that context of the students and their progress and their needs throughout the entire experience, rather than just have people come in and come out.
I always like to ask this of people who are teaching at Einhack. Did any of the final projects ever stand out to you, like as a highlight of your time teaching anyone's final project? I'll give you a reason I ask, because when we first started the podcast, someone on our cohort in the data course their final project was to take all of the UFO or alien abduction stories in the United States between a certain date and use that data to find out whether or not they were true or not based on the collection.
That's easier. <stuff. laughs>
And that's thought that was a great idea for a data-based project. So do you have any highlights like that from your time teaching?
I mean, it was so long ago that I don't really remember the good ones for whatever reason.
Or the bad ones. Is there a worst one that was so bad?
I won't say whether or not this is good or bad, but for whatever reason, the one that sticks out to me right now is that, you know how some businesses are offering the service, it's like a funerary service where they take your remains and they kind of bury you under a tree. The idea is that you are helping to make this tree grow. Well, for whatever reason, what's sticking out to me is that there was a student who made a project around this service. They didn't have this business, but like they just made a project, presuming that they did. And that's the one that's sticking out to me right now. But I'll say, because that's kind of a more like an application-y, business-y kind of thing, what really was the most delightful for me as a teacher was the first web dev project, which is a game. It wasn't always like this, but when we first made the transition to the JavaScript version of the course, that was there since then, so years ago. And I always really, really liked, or was really delightfully surprised at people's creativity when it came to making the games.
Yeah.
What was yours, Tim? I remember your game was a Star Wars.
Yeah, it was like a BB-8 side scroller that was like BB-8 would roll along and it was like I had to dodge the lasers and stuff.
Yeah, that was nice. Cool. I like that.
Yeah,
I would have enjoyed
actually,
that.
I saw someone post on LinkedIn their final project, which was like a holiday tour booking place, but they made it like it was like Middle Earth, and it was like Middle Earth tours, and it was like they were they built like a travel agency in Middle Earth, and you could like book a holiday in Mirkwood, or like, you know, visit
Love
the Balrog,
it.
And it was
visit the Balrog,
visit the Balrog,
bags of nuts,
yeah, for the adrenaline junkies, visit
exactly,
the Balrog,
yeah.
Funny.
And were you working as a developer before you taught? Because I'm always really interested in this whole idea of, like, you know, learning. Did you learn more about web development from teaching? And did you think it was a good way to learn? Because I certainly did. I taught after I did the boot camp, and I felt like it was a really great way to like establish those lessons. But did you find that it reinforced your learning, and did it help your career path towards becoming an engineer full time?
Yeah, I think it certainly did help me. Well, on the one hand, I was a web developer before teaching, but in web development, there is a lot of different technologies and in technology in general, there's just a lot of different things that you could learn. So it's not likely that there is one person who just knows about everything. So, right. So actually my background in terms of the technology was not really 100% aligned with what we were teaching at the time, which was Ruby on Rails. So I actually had to learn some of the technologies, or many of the technologies that we used in the course as I went. And that was helpful. I find that it's very helpful to learn about different technologies and different perspectives within coding and programming, because there's a lot of different opinions out there. There's a lot of different styles of designing the architecture of your code or your application. So I found that really eye-opening to learn, to be exposed to this other kind of community that I didn't really know a lot about when I first started. And I found that extremely helpful just for my own, just from a diversity perspective. Yeah. But even teaching, one of the interesting things about teaching, I think, is that every person, because of the experience they bring to the teacher-student relationship, everyone is going to have a different way of engaging with the material. Everyone is going to have different gaps in their experience. And so often a student will have a question that I never thought myself to ask. And so I would maybe something I just don't know, full stop, and I have to look it up. And I learn because of that, because they are wondering about something that I never wondered about for whatever reason. And I have to learn that. The other thing that that can cause is that it could be something I kind of know, but I've never actually posited that question and moved that thought around in my mind. So You can see me kind of going in real time, thinking about it, and then coming up with like the, because with experience, you really have a strong conceptual understanding of things. So using your conceptual understanding, you can kind of like, okay, well, if you change this, change that, change this, if you kind of run your little machine in your brain of how that would work, and you say, okay, well, the answer is this. But then I would never have done that exercise if not for the student asking me this question and kind of triggering that mental exercise. So nice. From that perspective, you get to have a better and more multifaceted understanding of the subject that you're teaching. Again, because you never thought to ask these things because you had a different experience than they did.
And it also shows you that if you are a junior working at a company, then it shows you the power of actually asking questions, because it does help your seniors as well. It's not just like you're being annoying. It's you're prompting conversation and you're having discussions around different pain points. So it's always always a good reason to ask questions.
Yeah, or exposing gaps in existing documentation, exposing gaps in the way the code is structured. Like, it's unintuitive, and something that's unintuitive within the work itself can cause mistakes later. Like, if someone if the code is misrepresenting itself, then a person will have a bad understanding of what that thing does, make a change that they wouldn't have made if they did have a more accurate understanding. And that's not the fault of the person. It's the fault of the way the code is set up. If it's unintuitive, there could be a way to make it more intuitive. And it's just that no one has ever examined that because, well, that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Nice.
So as a faculty member who's been on staff since the earlier days, what is your top pieces of advice, let's say top two or three pieces of advice for students coming into a boot camp, specifically in today's environment in the 2023 into the next 10 years of IronHack? What pieces of advice would you give new students to make the most of their course and to be the best prepared they can be?
Yeah, well, I want to caveat this by saying that when I taught, it was before the pandemic, so I never actually taught online. So there could be some things in a virtual classroom that I'm not aware of that this doesn't really apply to. But my number one piece of advice is take advantage of the resources that you have at your disposal while you're at IronHack.
Yep,
that's the number one thing. Like, ask your teacher more questions than you want to. Really take advantage of that time with them. Like, that's not that common where you have almost the undivided attention of someone who with a lot of expertise. Even when you work, when you get your first job, you're going to have some mentorship and some coaching and some guidance, but it's not going to be their whole day doing that. And the teacher has to divide their attention between all the different students, but I think that for many students, there were the teaching staff themselves were underutilized as a resource. I think you mentioned in a recent podcast it's a shame that the system is set up to favor extroverted people.
Well, last week.
That's the way it is. And if you're too shy to talk to anybody and ask anybody questions in the classroom, then I think you're really losing out. So do what you got to do to get the bang for your buck. I think that's a really, really big one.
I think I remember when I was doing my course, there was definitely a moment, I think in the second or third week, where everybody kind of shook off that fear. And then everybody's hand was up every moment of just like, what's that? Do that again. What are you doing that for? Why is that a square bracket? All that kind of stuff. And as soon as the gloves are off in a sense, then I think it gives everybody a bit of confidence to then just plow in with the questions, because they're so useful, because, you know, making use of that resource is very powerful.
Yeah, I think it depends on the groups. Different groups will have different, like, some groups will once you get them started, they'll never stop. Other groups will you have to constantly like try to incentivize them to participate. So it really depends. But I think for the most part, if people just ask 20% more questions than they do, or were 20% a little bit more extroverted, even if it was just for the time of during the course, then they would get a lot more from the experience.
Mm. Great first tip. I mean, I got to say, that's definitely my takeaway. Even after, 3 years of the podcast now, it's still, that's the top piece of advice I've ever heard. Make sure you actually get the most you can out of your time at IronHack. There's no, that means using the network as well, using the people, the rest of your cohort, staying in contact with the students you graduated with. That's a super valuable part of the whole experience. And then obviously using those teachers whilst you're in class to the maximum is kind of key.
Yeah. And you know, they'll help you later too, after the course is over, but you certainly should take advantage of the time when you don't have to work for it.
Yep. Even down to the careers advisors that they have afterwards, who will meet with students long after they've actually graduated to help them, you know, find their first job and stuff. So that's all part of the service that I think people tend to underutilize.
Shout out to Jesus.
Yeah,
many time guests of the show. Yeah. You also touched on the remote topic there, and obviously somebody who's worked on different campuses and has a lot of experience with IronHack. Do you kind of have a favorite campus that you've worked on? Are you fully remote now? Do you work on campus a lot, or what's your kind of preference?
Best campus is the question. What's the best one?
I'm not going to venture to even guess the best campus. I haven't been to all the campuses, so I don't have an informed opinion about what the best campus is.
But maybe if you were going to help somebody choose, then if someone was like, you know, I'm gonna join IronHack and I can learn from any campus around the world, how would you kind of help steer somebody's decision?
I would probably encourage them to make that decision based on the staff that would be there, not necessarily the campus itself or the location. I don't think the campus really makes as much of a difference or much of an impact as the people that you'll be working with and the people that are providing this premium service that you've just purchased. So I would encourage them to figure out who are the main players in the campus that they're going to be in, or in the campus that they might be in, and make that the primary mover of the decision. Secondarily, well, what environment you'd like to be in. Like, do you like, I don't know, electronic music? Maybe Berlin is the best, is a better fit. Do you like fine art? Maybe Paris is a better fit. Do you like, I don't know. That's as much as I have in terms of.
I was wondering how long you would go with that list.
Not that long. Not that. Do you like walking uphill? Go to Lisbon. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think that would be secondary more than the actual people you're working with.
Yeah, it's good insight though.
I would agree.
Useful, yeah.
So it seems like in the last 10 years, IronHack has changed a lot, and it sounds like there's a lot of growth to come in the future. Recently, speaking of change, you helped rebuild the IronHack website, right?
That's
right. How was that project? So we spoke to someone who built it, Tim. Who did we speak to?
We spoke to one of the designers who you worked with.
Alvaro. I listened to the episode.
Yeah. And we took a lot from that episode for newcomers, you know, how we were using the IronHack website rebuild as kind of an analogy for what it might be like to work on a project, you know, how that kind of looked. So how did that team structure work when you rebuilt the IronHack?
Well, I arrived. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, what better a place to a team to build a website with than a literal tech school of coders and designers?
Yeah. You'd think that technology would never be a problem in that case, even though it has been. But that's fine.
Well, then take us through that journey.
Yeah. Well, I was making a transition from the education team as a manager to going into engineering, and so that's the basic context of where I was at. So I joined the team as the development of the project was just starting to kick off. So there was a lot of context that I wasn't there to witness. So a lot of the stuff that Alvaro talked about, when he did all this research and all these interviews and all these other stuff, I wasn't there. He did that before I started. And okay. So he already kind of had a lot of that stuff figured out. And so they figured out a lot of things. They figured out, okay, well, maybe what our users need are not necessarily pages that are divided by their language, but rather they need regionally relevant content. So like someone may not be necessarily looking for an English course anywhere. They're going to be, well, I'm in the Netherlands or I'm in Germany. So I need stuff that's relevant to me in Germany. I'm not going to fly to Miami. Maybe some people do, but most likely they won't. They fly across the world to take a course. So they want to have something that's close by. So the major insight that we got is like, okay, we're going to structure everything by region, content by region, rather than content by language. And so that was a cool idea. A lot of websites do this. And not only that, but the whole website was redesigned. Like, I think, I'm not sure it was clear based on your conversation with him, but actually in terms of technology, we built everything from scratch. Everything was new.
Nice.
And completely designed. We implemented a design system to make designs of future construction of future pages easier. And so all this stuff, these decisions were already made by the time I got there. And I was kind of along for the ride and figuring things out of, okay, how do we actually get this done? In terms of the team, it was me and my now former boss, who was like the lead of the engineers. He and I were working on this project together, and plus there was another two developers that basically were on their way out. So they were only there for the early parts of the development, and later on it was just him and me. Eventually we hired some other people at the beginning of the year before the launch, but basically the main part of the development was just us, him and me, and then we have Alvaro, our designer, who is making all the design decisions and consulting with us for things that maybe he didn't thought of, and like, oh, what about this case? What about that case? You know, technical people are very like detail oriented, and they think of a lot of things that may not come up when you first look at a design. And then aside from that, we have a product manager who is helping us basically deal with everybody else so we can just focus on the work. So that was the makeup of the team. Shout out to product managers for sure. You know, subtle difference project, but the product manager in this case, he's the person who's talking to all the stakeholders, so I don't have to, and I love that.
Yeah.
Nice. And from like for those people who are like, you know, they might have just listened to that, you know, graduates, and thought, oh my goodness me, that is like a lot of communication, and that sounds very confusing. Is that like, you know, should people see that as like a very straightforward build? Is that like your usual process, or you know, is it as confusing as
building your own tech is a big not just using some pre-built website, you know, WordPress, Webflow, something like that to do it, and building everything from scratch is a very admirable thing. Yeah, it must have taken a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a big project, and I think for our graduates anyway, I think they come out of the course with a big appreciation about how even the smallest of seemingly small features can cause a lot of work. So there's always that, but as long as you're working with experienced people, not everyone has to be like super, super experienced, but like as long as there are people on the team that have the experience that can guide the project, then it's certainly something that is feasible. And the product manager honestly helps so much because we on our team, we don't really have that many hours of meetings in a given week. So our regularly scheduled meetings are maybe 3 hours in the entire week. Everything else is just heads down time that we have, and then we communicate over Slack and so on. Maybe we'll have one-off meetings when it's needed, but the fact that we have a person who is filtering our communication and making sure to use the appropriate channels, like, and so that to minimize distractions, really helps a lot for productivity.
Nice.
And since then, how's the upkeep been? I mean, you mentioned SEO. So firstly, for our newer listeners in the field out there, what is SEO? And, you know, secondly, the second part of my question is, how's the upkeep of that that code been? You know, having your own code base and all your own technologies, your own style guide, has it just been a kind of set and forget project, or has there been a few unexpected hitches since launch?
Yeah. Well, I think I'll answer the second part first. And it's like the Golden Gate Bridge. You're always painting it throughout the year and you never stop painting it. I've come to realize that as soon as you finish the end, you have to go back to the beginning. So I've come to realize that, and it's normal for a marketing website for it to kind of be a project that's always ongoing. There's always things to optimize. There's always things that need to be added. For special campaigns, for random bugs, there's always different things that can be optimized. We actually intended to do more pages than we ended up doing right now, but because of other the way we prioritize things, then there's still in theory other pages that we would add to the website that we haven't gotten to. So it's just like a constant process of evolution and figuring out, okay, how is the website performing now? How can we improve it? What are new needs and new requirements from the business that pop up? And that process is, as far as I'm concerned, never ending, which is a good thing because that means I'm not going to be out of a job because the project is quote unquote over.
Yeah, and your grandfather didn't. You know the code base now, so you know, make it unreadable for anyone else. So then you're stuck.
Right. The opposite of what we were saying.
That's the way. For any new coders out there, that's the way to make sure you keep a job. No one else can understand what you did. Yeah,
that's the trick. So SEO though, search engine optimization is what the letters stands for. It's basically what technical and content changes need to be made to the site in order to achieve the desired ranking in when users search for it on search engines. And usually people think of Google when they think of search engines, but there's also other search engines too, like Bing. But anyway, so different search engines will look at your website and analyze what's going on in the website based on a lot of different factors. And then based on that and based on users visiting user traffic that they can gather from the tools like Google Analytics, they will rank your website based on a random search that you do. So if you search for data analytics bootcamps Berlin, Google will take those words and look at all the websites in the entire world that they've processed and figure out like what's going to be number one, number two, number three, number four for that particular search. So that you're trying to optimize that. That's the whole point of SEO.
It feels like another never-ending task here, right? By the time you've optimized one thing, you'll have to just keep on optimizing forever.
It could be a never-ending process because because of the algorithms that these services, these search engines use to analyze your website, and with who knows how many factors we actually don't know how many factors they take into account, not for a fact anyway. You could be continuously optimizing it depending on how much you obsess over it. But in our case, it wasn't really arbitrary or random or it wasn't like a throughout the year kind of process, we're always doing it kind of thing that we decided to really focus on it. We actually noticed that our organic traffic was taking a dip based when we made our change to the new website. So organic traffic is the traffic that comes to our website from search engines. So people just randomly searching data analytics bootcamp or bootcamp Mexico City, and they click on one of the results on our page. We noticed that we had less people arriving at our website from those sources.
Do you have to, then there must be a fine line between not just having keywords, like pages and pages of keywords, but like even hidden elements that just have keywords on them, and also making a coherent copy for a website. I feel like that's a very specific skill to learn to be good at.
Yeah, and I don't pretend that I am an expert in this thing, because I understand a little bit more about the technical side of things, but actually there are people who dedicate, like as a career, understand search engines and give recommendations about what you should do to your website in order to optimize things. In fact, we hired one such person for the recent changes that we're working on now.
Nice. Well, shout out to the copywriters. Okay, then. So my final question, I don't know if you have any, Tim, but what's next? What's next for you now, looking into the next 10 years of Ironhack, or you and the engineering team? I know you're new there. Now the website's up and running. What's on the roadmap for you personally?
Before you answer that, can we just take one little step back to the SEO topic? Because I think that it's, as you say, there are industry experts out there who are, you know, probably working on it night and day. But do you think it's important for juniors to know about it? You know, like if someone's just graduating from their bootcamp and they're listening to this and they're like, well, the experts will do that, I don't have to care about it. Do you think it's something that they should be interested in, or like take an eye to it as they're, you know, as they start on their journey into the world of tech?
I don't like SEO. I think because you're doing SEO, I have to do SEO. Like if you're not optimizing your travel website blog to have more keywords in, then I don't have to optimize mine. Right? Let the chips fall where they may.
So you think it's an arms race?
I feel like as an ignorant product manager, sometimes coder, but not SEO specialist, it's an arms race.
It's basically a cold war.
So I guess the question is, like, to what extent is it useful for newcomers, especially bootcampers, to be aware of this part of it?
Yeah, well, I agree that it is a somewhat niche subject. So I think that for me, it's clear that it's not relevant for everyone. And I think the first thing you should consider is whether or not it's relevant to the product you're working on. I'll give you a really quick example of something to analyze to decide if SEO is relevant for you or not. Is your website public facing, or is everything hidden behind a login? If your product is hidden behind a login, SEO is not a concern for you at all. Google or another search engines cannot log into a website because they don't have an account. And as far as I know, they're not sophisticated enough to make an account yet. So if you're working on a product that only works for the users on your website who have accounts, and therefore cannot, and that product cannot be searched or crawled by the software that Google uses, then SEO is not relevant for you at all. Now, that product may have a public-facing website where the marketing happens, where you, you know, you click buy now or whatever. But you may not work on that. So, so if you don't work on that part of the website situation, then SEO is not relevant for you. It is relevant for you if you have a marketing website where you're trying to drive traffic from all over the world to your website in order to essentially sell them something or have them learn something, whatever the, you know, whatever your goal is. If you have a public facing website, SEO could be relevant for you. But then again, it's something that you shouldn't, like, even though maybe you should be doing some basic maintenance throughout the your time working on this thing, it may not be the main priority for the business at the moment. And that's something that, you, that your business needs to measure. And I don't think it's really, it's not necessarily the job of developers to make that analysis and understand, oh yeah, well, you know, last month we had 20% more traffic than we do this month. Is that an SEO problem? Like, no, it's not necessarily the developer's job to analyze that. It could be a UX UI designer's job to analyze that. It could be a data analyst's job to analyze that. It could be a product manager's job to do that. But you deciding what to focus on is not necessarily, like, it's not necessarily your job as a developer to decide what is the most important priority for the business in terms of adding value through this software product.
Masterclass. Yep, good advice.
That's very good. Very nice. Yeah, like it. Go on then, Dan, fire off your last question.
That was it. I just wanted to know what's next on the map. Is there anything you want to promote either personally or what's coming up with IronHack or what students should look out for in the future? Anything exciting happening on the Paris campus? Anything at all? Now's the time.
Boy, I don't think I have anything. I'm so boring.
Reading list is a good one here. If you're reading a cool book or if you can recommend a cool book, that's another little good point.
I am reading a cool book. I am reading the second book in the Three Body Problem trilogy. So I think one of you mentioned that you enjoyed sci-fi.
Yep. Okay.
This is a great sci-fi book. Okay. It's called Three Body Problem. That's the first book. I don't want to talk too much about it because actually the plot of the second book is basically a spoiler for the first book.
Okay.
But Three Body Problem, I'm on the second book. I'm almost done with the second book of three. It is great. I love it. It's one of these like sci-fi books that there's, it's like a slow burn where like introduce different perspectives of different characters. And, you don't quite know where they were going with this, but then once you get it, once you get where they're going, it's a wild ride.
So my only question is if it's a slow burn, there's lots of different characters. Does that pay off? Does it get coherent at some point? Because I,
yes, no, it does. Okay, it does. And once it does, once you have that moment of like, oh, they're trying to do this. It's crazy.
I'm about three quarters through the first book. And I think I've just had that moment of like, oh my goodness, because there's all these moments and you're just like, okay, this, and then he's doing that. And then he goes there and then suddenly you're like, whoa. So yeah, I can recommend the first one. There you go.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sold. I'm actually in the market for a new thing to run to. So I will get that on the go. If I can find an audio version of it, otherwise I'll just have to get a copy of the book and have a sit and read.
Just read Winter's it coming. Whilst you're running.
And I should mention that I was recommended this book by an IronHack alumnus.
Oh, really? So,
okay, chat there you go. Them. There you I go. Forgot the name.
Great people but, attract great people, no?
Yeah, great. Great.
Thank you so much for your time today, Nizar. It's been really, really awesome to get the insight of an OG in the IronHack family and to get some really good insight on how things have changed. So thank you very much.
My pleasure. Hope it's useful.
You're back. You didn't jump.
No. Well, I mean, people are going to reach their minds back to the beginning of the episode there. Yes. Great episode with Nizar. Really cool, you know, glimpse at the past and hopeful for the future.
I'm glad he gave that three body problem a shout out as well.
That's I have to get into that thing. So yeah, there you go. There you have it. That's where it's come from. That's where it's going. SEO as well. A little dive into that. If you are new in the field and that kind of piqued your interest as to one of the many wonderful aspects of web dev and UX UI and data analytics, then sign up now.
I didn't actually want to interrupt him because he was in a real flow, but one of the useful things, if you're working at an agency or you're working at a company and you want to use a really cutting edge technology, which sometimes you might think, oh God, I'm not going to get this
pen and paper.
Yeah. Back to pen and paper. But if you're like, you know, I want to use Svelte or something, I want to use like a really new cutting edge library. SEO is actually a very good way of getting it over the line, because the newer libraries are optimized for SEO. They run a lot faster.
There you go.
If you want a trick, then
it's what's interesting about that is a lot of the bigger companies are still running on things like Angular. Right. All right. That's it, everybody. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And, shout out to the last 10 years of Einhack. And here's to another 10.
Goodbye. See you in 10 years.